Guy that played here, one of the best cornerbacks that ever played the game, right now here in Tuscaloosa, Antonio Langham. Welcome back to T-Town. I hope you're doing well, sir.
I'm great, Ryan. How are you doing today?
I'm excited because Alabama football is right around the corner, and I can probably say the same for you as well.
Yes, I am. I'm very excited now. We're starting to get football back in our life, and, you know, after watching the World Cup and the United States, I enjoyed that, but we're getting back to some football.
Now,
I know they call that football, but we're back to football.
How in the world is a guy from Town Creek, Alabama, like soccer?
It took a long time for it to grow on me. I mean, we didn't play soccer at Town Creek. We really didn't even know what soccer was. We had three different balls in Town Creek, a football, a basketball, and a baseball. That was it. I didn't even know what a soccer ball looked like. And then we did have, occasionally we had the volleyball team at our high school. But other than that, soccer, that was out of the question.
Antonio Langham right now helping us out. And let me ask you, let's go back and sort of your analysis. I know that any other place in the country, 11-2 season is considered a successful season. But when you're accustomed to winning SEC championships and national titles the way that Alabama's been able to do over the course of history, 11-2 has been a disappointing season. It's been a disappointing offseason for Alabama fans. Should it be?
Honestly, it shouldn't be. But like you just said, when you're used to winning the SEC all the time and you've played in, what, at least three national championships in almost 4 years, 11-2 is a very disappointing season. To most universities out there, that's one heck of a season. But to the Alabama fan, that's a terrible season. That's a season that they all want to forget. But I guess when you have established yourself as a dynasty, when you have established yourself as a dominant force in college football, they don't expect you to lose a game, which is going to happen sometimes, but they don't expect you to lose a game. And when it happens, it's almost like it's the end of the world. So, I mean, it's understandable when you build this, when you have bring good recruits in and play like these kids play and win like they do, that's all you expect is to win. So it's understandable. It's tough on the kids and the coaching staff there, but it's understandable.
I want to walk you back to a little bit of old-school football. I want to walk you back to Cleveland. You played for Nick Saban, correct?
Yes, I did.
What did you see in him back then that would make you think that he's going to – I mean, nobody could have ever dreamed what he's been able to accomplish in Tuscaloosa, but did you see something back there that in him that stood out to you as your position coach?
Yes, I did. I did. Nick was actually a great coach, a great defensive coordinator, a great teacher. I came out of college, and I knew how to play corner at college. And I knew how to play some corner in the NFL. I mean, I had a great defensive coordinator, Coach Oliver. He taught me very, very, very well. But there were some things that I needed to learn about the NFL game. And I was a 21-day holdout. And even with missing majority of training camp, I came in, and we went right to work. And Nick went right to work with me, technique, teaching me the game in the NFL. And at the end of the day, I mean, I was brought into a veteran defense. And at the end of the day, I mean, to win Defensive Rookie of the Year without having much of any training camp, that's a testament to that man and how well he knows the game and how well he teaches the game. I always tell him all the time, though, and he laughs at me when I come to practice, I always tell him that he's much softer now as a college head coach than he was as an assistant coach in the NFL. I told him when he was in the NFL, there were a lot of days I hated him because he was just so tough as an assistant coach in the NFL. But then everybody look at him and see him shaking and going off on the sideline in college, and I'm like, ah, that's easy. You should have been there. You should have been a player for him when he was in the NFL. He was much, much harder then. He always laugh about it when he see me. I always say, well, Antonio says I'm softer now, which I always say, right in his face, I always say, you are.
Wow. You are shocking me with this. And Antonio, today, okay, because Alabama's got some young defensive backs, and I'm sure you remember those days when you walked out on that mm-hmm. practice field and you were young and up and coming, and maybe you didn't think that you would be an All-American, one of the 110 that represent the University of Alabama. Nick Saban was intense today, my friend. I thought he was going to put the pads on and tackle a couple of those young DBs. I mean, he was intense. Maybe I'll send you a private video because I'm not able to post it on YouTube because I don't have enough beeps, you know. But Nick Saban was intense today coaching those DBs.
I was at practice about a year or two ago, and he jumped a kid at practice one day, and I mean, he went from one end of the field all the way to the other end of the field, chewing this kid out. So I'm standing on the sideline with another one of my teammates I played with at Alabama. He walks down the sideline right there where I'm standing. He turns and looks at my other teammate with me and says, "That's how I used to chew him out when he was a rookie." Then he started laughing and walked off.
Oh, wow.
I want to say, you're very right about that.
All right.
A lot of times when I wanted to fight you.
All right, Antonio, I'm gonna let you dispute a rumor, okay? Because there's a lot of things that are said about negative about Nick Saban. And I've heard a coach, and I don't want to call out his name, because there's some guys out there that says that Nick Saban doesn't teach defensive backs very well. And I think you've argued that point. How far from the truth is that? That he's not...
That's very, very far from the truth. Here's the situation you have to look at, and I've heard some people say that too, and I try to correct them or say what I feel or what I think is going on. I can teach you the correct things to do, and I can tell you the correct things to do until I'm blue in the face. But until you, the player, is willing to accept it and go out there and work on it and do it correctly, there's nothing else I can do but keep screaming and fussing at you to get it right. Now, after a certain length of time and you just don't seem to get it or pick it up, you're not willing to put in the extra time yourself to get better at that, that's no longer on me as a coach. That's on you, because I can only keep teaching you. Then I have to move on to find me some other people that's willing to get it done. Here's the thing nowadays with some of these kids, they don't understand. A lot of them try to memorize things. If you're a left corner, they try to memorize only what the left cornerback does. But if you happen to have to be moved into the inside at like a star position or a nickel position, you've only memorized what to do at the left corner, but you haven't studied and actually learned the defense and learned what everybody does collectively, because you never know when you might be put in that position. Then when you get there, you don't know what to do because you've only memorized what's out there. See, what's going on, and these kids going to have to learn now and understand, is you have to spend time on your own. We don't have time to teach you all day, every day, because we're installing game plans, we're going through this, and we just don't have time to sit there and teach you. You got to be willing to put some extra time in. And when these kids are not willing to put the extra time in themselves, I mean, at some point, it no longer becomes a coach's fault. It's the kid's fault. You got to learn how to take responsibility for your actions sometimes and take the initiative to learn if I keep teaching it to you over and over and over. And that's the one thing about when I went to the NFL. I'm 21 day old out. I've got to study extra. I've got to go to my room and put that book to my face and learn, go in the meeting room, get constructive criticism, go out there and correct it. And the one thing about it, in my mind, I'm only going to make that mistake one time, and I'm going to learn from it, and I'm never going to make that mistake again. And see, this is how these kids' mindset is going to have to be, because I guarantee you, Nick Saban is not putting them kids out there on that football field if he's not teaching them.
Antonio Langa, right now on a Throwback Thursday presented by Brian Harden Construction. I've got about 3 minutes left, and I'm going to ask you a question going back to the 1992 team. Alabama is going to try to implement a toss sweep, a fullback lead toss sweep. I believe in 92 they called it a 27 or 28 was the play call. What did that do for a defensive back? How do you defend when a fullback's leading? Talk about how effective the toss sweep is of spreading that defense out wide.
Well, if it's a corner and let's say defensively you're in a cover two and they're tossing their ball out there, you're usually going to have a fullback pulling, coming at you, and you're going to have an offensive lineman pulling, maybe a guard or some backside guard or something pulling. And they're coming, if you're having to be the corner that has to force they catch you in the cover two in that type of play, you have to be the fourth guy, which means you have to come in and force that ball back into the inside. That's tough on the corner because you're taking on 230-pound, 40-pound fullback. You're taking on a 300-some-pound lineman. So there's almost 500-600 pounds coming at you, and you're supposed to throw your body in there and just cause a pile. You're supposed to make a collision and cause a pile to just try to slow this thing down. It's tough on the corner because we're finesse guys. We rather you put me out wide and say, look, that's your man, take him out of the game and let everybody else deal with that. Now, when you force me to be in that situation where I got to come up and start fourth and run, we don't want to do that. We ready to get out of that. We going to back down from that as soon as possible. So when you got guys putting like that, corners don't want to take on those lead blockers. They do not want to take on a fullback or a lineman. We do not want that. We quick to tell you and put the safety up there in that box and let him do all that filling. That's what he's supposed to do. So we don't. It takes a toll on us. We don't want to do it.
Follow-up to that is looking at a defensive back, and I've got about 45 seconds. Derrick Henry's going to be a weapon. T.J. Yeldon's going to be a weapon. Both of those guys are 235, 245, have got quick speed. How would you tackle a big guy like Derrick Henry that, you know, is much taller, much bigger than you are? Obviously, you're not going to back down, but is there a different approach you would take with those bigger backs?
Most people say go low, hit them low, but that's how you get knocked out because they're very strong in their legs. You come down and hit them low, you get caught in the side of the head with a knee or something that knocks you out. I just say hit them, kind of hit them up high around the waist and just hold on and wait on the cavalry to get there.